5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you with another amazing podcast. And I say that not because I'm amazing, but because you're amazing. Our cancer survivors / thrivers here to give you some information that hopefully will help you in your survivorship. Along with me, as always, my best friend in podcasting, in the podcast land, Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. Angel, how the heck are you doing?
I am good. Surgery went well, and I'll have to send you a picture of the beautiful cyst.
Yeah, you know, we'll have to put it on the website for everyone to Google over.
That's it.
Angel, I'm so excited today. We have a real, very nice, quick podcast. Yep. We're going to take a trip down memory lane and go to an experience. And again, something that helped shape my, my personal philosophy as it relates to helping our survivors / thrivers. And, I love these podcasts because I love podcasts that start with a story. And I think you agree.
Absolutely. There's nothing better than telling a story within a story to make a point.
Yep. And for our, three listeners who listen every week, I want to say that, I apologize for repeating stories, but for all the other thousands of people who just kind of come in and out as needed, I can keep telling stories until the sun goes down because it will never get boring for you. But in any case, for many of you who know me, know that my road to becoming an oncologist was not a straightforward road. I took many detours. I went from being a very focused college student, even high school student for that point, maybe even grammar school student who knew they wanted to be a doctor, and then got into medical school through the grace of God and went through my 4 years. And just when I thought I knew everything, I got into internship and I really started to flounder and didn't know what direction to go. I did some internal medicine. I did some anesthesiology. I did some geriatrics, and I sort of went into a career crisis. It was sort of, I was that sailboat with the sails blown from the wind and from the storm, and sort of, rudderless and kind of lost out at sea. And then all of a sudden, radiation oncology popped up, an opportunity popped up, a spot opened up, and I grabbed it. And I thought to myself, well, let me just finish something. Let me finish this, and the rest is history. So my experience in internal medicine, anesthesia, I'm going to use the word isolation. I felt very isolated when I was doing those subspecialties. And it wasn't because of my fellow colleagues, my fellow residents, very good doctors, very good people, but we were really too busy to develop relationships. We tried to get together, but inevitably somebody was always on call or too tired, or some of my colleagues were married and, they had little kids. So it was a very disjointed experience. Anesthesia was even more isolating because, you were basically in this room and it was much more of a every man / woman for themselves kind of atmosphere. And then, even when I was on, attending a code in the day, and I'm happy to say that's not like this anymore. It wasn't, very, very geared toward teamwork. There was sometimes, these events would be very contentious, like who was in charge, who was taking responsibility, who was the one running the code. And I'm happy to say that has changed pretty much probably in most areas of medicine. But on May 1st, 1988, and I say this in jest, but a day that will live in infamy, from Franklin Delano Roosevelt's speech after Pearl Harbor. I went into my residency. I had my pretty new shoes on and I had a nice shirt on and a tie on. And I went into the residency on May 1st. I was a little off kilter. Usually we start July 1st, but for that particular residency, the spot opened up on May 1st. So I showed up at work and, usually what happens, and I don't know if they do this anymore, but the young, first year residents in radiation oncology, as I said, at least in those days, they'd throw me on, they would throw us onto the treatment machines, onto the linear accelerator. And it was, I would use the analogy, it was like they threw us to the therapists. They were our drill sergeants. They were the ones that were going to teach us. They were the ones that were going to whip us into shape, like we were, on Paris Island in South Carolina or in Carolina. And we were Marines and we were getting, the crap beaten out of us. And they were getting us to be at least worthy of being in the clinic. And within the first 15 minutes of that first day, I heard somebody shout out, "Lift help." And I had no idea what that meant. But all I knew is that every single therapist, resident, doctor, nurse, whoever was in earshot, just if it was possible for them to drop what they were doing, they would drop what they were doing. And they went into they wordlessly, without any words, no one had to, call any instructions. They just came into the vault. And it was like a Vince Lombardi, well practiced sweep. Basically, everyone maneuvered to get the patient from the stretcher to the treatment table. And it was done seamlessly, it was done safely, and it was done happily. And that was really my introduction into the world of oncology, because that experience and that story, of course, is a metaphor, but it was a metaphor for teamwork. And who would have thunk it that teamwork and collegiality actually improves outcomes? And that moment, from that moment of being that, the first year resident in radiation oncology in St. Barnabas Hospital in Short Hills, New Jersey, that would sort of set the stage and get my mind thinking about what kind of department I would want to run, or what kind of teamwork do I want to try to exact, as Vince Lombardi would try to exact the perfect sweep. I wanted to exact that same feeling where everyone was basically one mind. And I found a paper from Dowdy, McGuffin, and Fagan from the Journal of Radiotherapy in Practice, that had a quote that I'm going to read directly from. Teamwork is the central framework in healthcare delivery. Team dynamics can impact the team as a whole and has been identified within the literature as a contributing factor to quality and safety, patient satisfaction, staff satisfaction, and overall performance. Within radiation oncology, teamwork is essential in the delivery of high-quality care, yet team building and team development is underreported. So, Angel, in all aspects of our work together at Garnet Medical Center, we look to each other, even in between departments, for teamwork. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So, Angel, when we talk about these these concepts as far as looking at metrics and looking at ways that we have to build teamwork, I kind of that's sort of my pet peeve, because I say to myself, do we need to take a class on learning how to breathe? And the answer to that is, of course, no. All of this research, this need to research team building, to quantify and qualify team building, all the surveys that we have to do, all of the consultants that the hospital spends money on, all the money. I think, and again, this is my pet peeve, I really believe it's an incredible waste of effort and an incredible waste of money. I say what my kids used to say when they were young. It's like, duh, like obvi, like it's obvious to me. That when they bring in these consultants, they bring in these words like teamwork, respect. They talk about leadership and hierarchy. They talk about safety and errors. They talk about team training, team dynamics. They talk about civility. They talk about who's your best pal at work, which would be you, Angel. You're my best pal at work. Team cohesiveness and team culture. And the reason I say like duh, like obvi, is oncology has something that no other subspecialty has. It has something that grounds us. It has something that inspires us. It has something that unites us. A force that's so powerful, it changes a traditionally top-heavy hierarchical caste system with the doctors on top of that triangle to an egalitarian beehive, anthill type of mentality where everyone is equal and everyone's vision is in sync. And that force that I'm talking about, Angel, you know it. It's called the survivor slash thriver. And I think that that's the difference. And that's why I think all of the need to do all of these studies and do all of these surveys and spend all this money on consultants, you know, I think it's really not necessary because I'm going to tell you why. And another reason that all of this emphasis on metrics is such a waste is the healthcare industry as a whole, no matter how the pundits want to spin it. If they want to spin it with hearts and smiley emojis, all of the flapping jibber jabber, whatever they want to do to try to make healthcare into something that's other than just a business, at the end of the day, they can't. It's a business just like any other business. And the organization most of us work in are large organizations that really can't ignore protocols. They can't ignore compliance. They can't avoid equality, policies and procedures, union challenges, you know, HR rigidity, in order to single out a highly functioning, high performance employee like yourself, Angel, and someone like you that should be recognized and should be, you know, integral to creating the workplace. It just can't happen because that's just the system that we work in. So I think that this bureaucracy is like it's sort of like the hounds from hell that have been unleashed. And that's basically just the environment that we work in. But what no one seems to get is that this truth, this reality, this giant, clumsy, awkward machine is never going to change. So, what they say in a 12-step program is God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, what can we, as the medical directors and the oncology leaders, the nursing leaders, what can we do, our administrative leaders in oncology? What can we do to create a spectacular team dynamic? And the answer is from reframing our responsibilities and to talk about the sin of parsimony. Parsimony means cheapness, and cheapness doesn't have to be cheapness of money. It could be also cheapness of spirit. So it would be very fair and reasonable to think that the cost for expanding your team and for paying for team building events should be shouldered by the hospital or from the healthcare system. That's very fair and reasonable. It's very fair and reasonable to think that there will always be a few team members who are not high achievers, who actually may be toxic to the work environment and may be spoiled. So they are undeserving of any special consideration. We would think that's very fair and reasonable. We would also think it would be very fair and reasonable to think that the extremely lucrative financial reward that we receive as medical directors, as doctors, as nurses, is from all of our hard work and all deserved from all our years of study and sacrifice, that this is owed to us. And we should be able to spend that money that we get any way we want to lavish ourselves, to spend money on ourselves, to travel or to buy nice things or a nice home or put it away for a rainy day or for early retirement or whatever it is that we want to do. That would be fair and reasonable to think that, right, Angel?
I
And you
agree.
would be, yep, and you would be right, but you would also be wrong. I want to talk about the reality of cancer part two. Oncology is a team effort, and I've already demonstrated that. especially in radiation oncology. I personally don't turn on the machines. I don't turn off the machines. I don't throw the patients onto the table, even with lift help. I don't construct the plans, and I usually don't manage the patients on a day-to-day basis. That's usually the nurses and nurse practitioners. So at the end of the day, I see the patients, I create the plan, I make sure that I guide them, but I'm not the actual person who does the work. I want to point out that this is true in most aspects of medicine. We're all part of this bigger, bigger system that we can't do what we do without other people to assist us to follow through the orders that we put together. And that's really important. The days of doctors, and there are doctors that I have a lot of respect for, that have an incredible ability to bring the dead back to life, to be able to microscopically, with, you know, microscopic lenses, clip an aneurysm in the brain where one false move one way or the other would mean death to the patient, or a cardiothoracic surgeon who takes a heart out and puts in another heart. That's a top-heavy system, and you still have people you need, you know, to work around you, but that's a singular skill, and that's not what I'm talking about. In cancer, especially in radiation oncology, but in medical oncology as well, less so in surgical oncology, we are all very small parts of a very big system. So that's why I think we could reframe our responsibilities instead of trying to just pawn them off on the hospital. Number two, cheapness or parsimony is a sin. It's a character flaw. I remember a manager who we won a contest in the hospital, and the hospital was going to provide like two pizzas for the department. And all they had to do was like go in their budget and like buy the other eight pizzas so everyone could have a slice of pizza. And that wasn't going to happen. What am I going to say? That's just terrible. Number three, if we waited, for who should be responsible to do the right thing, right? So I'm going to use, my love of history and of the World War II and D-Day, we'd all be speaking German. So on that day, all of the higher ups, all the plans that were made, they all failed, every single one of them. All the paratroopers were dropped in the wrong places. All of the bombings of those embattlements with the guns, none of them hit. All of those machine guns were going and, you know, killing all the soldiers on the beach, unrelenting. And there were no officers to tell people what to do. A person on Juno Beach, or a person on Dog Green or Dog Red or Gold Beach, they were usually in the wrong spot. They didn't know who their commanders were. They didn't know anything. So a bunch of, privates and corporals and sergeants, they scrapped the plan and they did all the right stuff. They got in the bulldozers, they opened up the beach, they climbed up, the cliffs and, getting killed and shot all the way to take the embankments. Nothing went the way it should have been. All they had to do is just sit behind some obstacle and keep from getting shot. But instead, what they did was they did the right thing. They didn't wait, for someone to do the right thing. They didn't wait for the admirals and the generals to come in and do the right thing. They did the right thing themselves. And that's the metaphor for we as leaders, as oncology leaders, to do the right thing, to develop your staff, to develop your team. That's your responsibility. It's not the hospital's responsibility. It's your responsibility. When I changed accountants maybe 15 years ago, there was a line item in my QuickBooks that said, for staff development. And the accountant, having dealt with a million different doctors, had never seen that line item before. And when they saw the line item and they saw the amount that the line item was, they absolutely thought I was insane. And I probably am insane. And as a matter of fact, I'll pretty much tell you I'm insane. But I still think that it's the saddest thing in the entire world And I think it's a disgrace that I'm thought of as such an aberration just for being good to the staff, for just trying to create a team atmosphere. And that's where we're going to talk about if we build it, they will come. And here's the way I want our leaders to start thinking. I want you guys to make a budget that might make you a bit uncomfortable, but certainly I don't want to put you in agonizing pain over it, but just, you know, just hear me out. Put a line item, talk to your accountant and say, I want a line item for staff development. Whatever number it is that you feel comfortable with, that's fine. And then I want you to invest in three things. I want you to invest in professional expansion. So my first, you know, departmental leader or chairman was a great guy. Well, he was a tough guy, but he was a very kind and generous guy. His name was Lou Sanfilippo, and Lou used to send the senior residents every year to the national meeting. He would take us to meetings in the city all the time. He would take us out for lunch at very nice restaurants. He would, you know, really treat the staff like, you know, really well. And they were very loyal to him. And he set the example for me. And I really appreciate that he did that. You know, it's our responsibility to help our team grow professionally, to give them lectures, to reimburse them for continuing medical education, to send them on site visits, to help them with their professional organizations, and to support them if they want to do any community volunteering or any sort of survivorship outreach. That should be us recognizing them for doing that. We also have to help them personally expand. So sometimes we bring people in. Sometimes we throw everybody in a bus and we take them out. You know, we're right next to New York City with some of the best pizza in the world. I've taken them on pizza crawls with world-renowned pizza experts. We've gone to food lectures. We've gotten on the bus. We've gone to sports events, tailgate parties, plays, museums, picnics, music, family days, you name it, we've done it. And it helps them to expand themselves. And also it's a team building experience because it helps us all to get together and get to know each other in a different environment. And then I also want you to invest in the white glove experience. The white glove experience might look a little different in your hospital, depending on who your compliance officer is. I remember there was a limit to the gift or I could give, because I used to give bonuses every year to everybody in the department. And then they said I couldn't do that. So then I wanted to buy everybody a pair of Converse that they would design. And then they said, well, I only had a certain amount for the budget. So you know how I worked around that, Angel?
Yeah. No, what is it?
So basically what I did was I put the order in for half the department on December 29th. And I put in the order for the second half of the department on January 3rd. So this way I was
That's
able
smart.
To buy everybody a pair of shoes, but I was able to stay compliant. So again, thinking outside of the box, not a bad thing to do. And the other thing is, you know, it's great. If you want to buy 10 pizzas for the staff for lunch, fantastic. But I'm going to actually push you to go a little further. I want you to put a little work into it. So when COVID was COVID, and when we all walked into work every day thinking that we were going to die, I put together a 10-week lunch playoff, like to mimic the Super Bowl. And we basically had a food playoff every week between two different things. And we're talking about bringing food in from dim sum from Chinatown and cheesesteaks from Philadelphia. I mean, really, we went a little crazy. We brought a barbecue food truck in. I mean, of course, above and beyond, I know that, you know, you don't have to do that. But the whole point is it showed that there was an effort that was put in. And I think the staff really appreciated that. Why don't you give one of you, if there's people who actually work directly for you, which I have three amazing nurse practitioners, give them a day of wellness, give them a paid day off where they don't have to come to work. But you have to tell them they can only take the day off if they're going to do something for themselves, not do something with their kids, not do something with their spouses, do something for themselves, something that they can do to, you know, get to know themselves again, get to, do something that would, just give them happiness and give them joy. Bring in a masseuse or two. I brought in a masseuse school once to come in and give everybody a massage, and it didn't cost anything because they were students and no one got their neck broken. So it was cool. Then, what I did this year, something different, was that every month I have an hour for ed staff education, and I changed it around because everyone is so stressed. And Angel, you know this, the hospitals really right now, morale is at an all-time low. I put together an hour for an oasis of peacefulness, just little sort of, presentations, TED Talks, little great courses, lunches or whatever, where people could come in and not have to sit down and hear anything or be taught anything, just kind of an hour of rest before the day goes through. And I'm going to end my podcast with what I started with that quote. And I think it's really very important because at the end of the day, teamwork is everything. We talked about Lift Help and how that really impressed me and how that really stuck in my mind and has been sort of like my anthem, for the way that I try to build my team. And here's the quote: teamwork is the central framework in healthcare delivery. Team dynamics can impact the team as a whole and has been identified within the literature as a contributory factor to quality, safety, patient satisfaction, staff satisfaction, overall performance, and that all leads to one thing: better outcomes. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Your thoughts.
I would have to say, thinking you made me think of my mentor, who taught me that the nice thing about teamwork is that you always have others on your side. And teamwork is what makes the wheel move. But you're only as good as your staff. So to everybody who's listening today, always remember where you never forget where you came from. Always remember where you're going. But always remember that you are the leader and a direct reflection of your staff and them as well to you. So treat them well, respect them, because in the long run, you cannot do it by yourself.
Angel, wonderfully said. Thank you so much. I want to end this podcast with a dedication. I want to thank all of the therapists at St. Barnabas Hospital, past, present, and future, for the great work they did in training the residents and training me and helping me learn and helping me not just learn about medicine, but helping me to learn how to be a human being and how to be a good team player. I want to also give my beautiful pep talk to our survivor thrivers. This podcast wasn't directed at you, but it's all about you. You guys are the reason we get up in the morning. You guys are the reason why we go to work. You guys are the reason why we have such satisfaction doing what we do. The satisfaction is in helping you guys, very special people, very courageous and wonderful and very, very worthy people. That deserve to have our attention and to deserve to have a team that works together, that's coordinated, that you feel comfortable with to give you the best experience you can with treatments that are very dangerous and that are very toxic. And it's really important for this podcast to find ways in order to slowly trickle this information down for you guys and also to your providers. So I want to end by thanking, of course, Angel Santana, Rod Freeman, the entire Kroc board. And Angel, it's about that time we get together and get a board meeting together and get some good food in us and get some good work done. I
Absolutely.
want to thank all of the board of directors, and I can't wait to see you and meet up with you guys soon. I want to thank, of course, Michael John Benzea and Charlotte for their support of us. And I want to end this podcast the way I end every podcast. It is with a wish, it is with a prayer, it is with a blessing. And that would be wishing you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.